Is there a John Luck Pickard here?
Stardate 97700.73. This is Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name is Mike Moody, and the minor Star Trek character I desperately want to see show up in Star Trek Picard is Ro Laurin, played by Michelle Forbes on TNG.
It's a good one. And I'm Clyde Haynes, and I would say the minor Star Trek character I'd like to see show up, this is a good one, I'm going to go with Laura Brahms.
Laura Brahms. Wait, the hologram version or real version?
The real version.
All right.
I just warped in here.
We're live streaming, guys. We're live streaming.
Hey, howdy. This is episode 3 that we're going to be talking about.
Yes. Who's your...
Who are you?
Who are you?
Are you not looking at the rundown?
Of minor characters?
Characters.
Who are you first?
Who am I? I'm Grant Davis. And do I have a minor character?
That you want to see show up on Picard from all of Star Trek.
Benjamin Linus from Lost.
Oh, man.
Can I do that? Can I just have Smoke Monster show up?
Can I change my... Well, is Tilly a minor character?
No.
Okay, never mind then.
I know. So I'm cheating.
And who are you?
My name is Mariah Gossett, and I'm here to talk about some Trek. But when I saw this question... What?
I'm looking at the rundown. I see your choice.
Oh, I guess what's wrong with Chakotay?
Everything.
And Chakotay's not a minor character.
I know. That's why I said I'm cheating. But he had a budding love affair with Seven of Nine at the very end of Voyager.
Not really. They kind of just smash cut to the last 2 days on Voyager, and all of a sudden they were in love.
Yeah, that's how love works.
Minor.
Obviously, as we saw here on this episode, that is how love works.
Minor right. Characters, though.
I all know, right. So I cheated. But it's because I want to see, I like him.
You
I want to come back.
Day.
I do.
Well, that's fine. Tonight we are covering episode 2 of Picard, The End is a Beginning, a.k.a. Picard pieces out of the fucking vineyard finally, goddammit.
We go to space.
Episode 3.
Finally. Finally get to space.
This episode was written by showrunner Michael Chabon and James Duff, directed by Hanel M. Culpepper, and this episode concludes the first act of season 1.
Yes.
According to the showrunners, which is a weird way to
also according,
write TV.
It's 100% the way you write TV.
No, it's not.
So if you've ever watched the video on YouTube, it's a good one called Every Story is the Same. You learn about the hero's journey.
We'll get there.
And we're going to get there. They're like, Mariah, shut up for now.
I read Joseph Campbell, all right? Okay. Before we dive into episode 3 of Picard, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. That's the only way we're going to grow this podcast and be able to keep podcasting about new Star Trek for you and everyone who wants to watch and listen. So please go to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. We'll read your review on the pod. And you'll help us move up the charts, get seen by other Star Trek fans.
And give us something to read at night when we're trying to fall asleep.
Yeah. Give us something
to induce anxiety.
Unless it's a 3-star or 2, I'm just going to get angry.
Yeah. You know, we're trying to induce and reduce anxiety.
It's going to stay up all night. And if you want links to all of our podcast subscription options, including Stitcher, Apple, YouTube, etc., go to StarTrekPod.co. And a quick note to our audio only listeners. We're streaming the pod live on YouTube every Thursday.
You can see our face.
After every episode of Picard. Thursday night. if we get enough people watching on the stream live, we can probably keep this up for Star Trek Discovery. So it's kind of an experiment.
We got to pay for all the makeup we're using, guys.
As you can see.
Yeah.
And we want to encourage everyone watching live on YouTube to post comments and questions for us in the chat. We'll read on the air later. In the pod, just tag your questions with the word pod in all caps, and we can see it and talk about it.
Yeah, definitely as we get near the end of the episode, I think, we'll jump in and look at all the comments. So
follow the rundown.
Yeah.
Which so you haven't looked at.
What's this rundown here?
Took a long time making this. Grant, how else can people support our little baby podcast?
Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go there. Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go there and make a per episode donation. Don't give us $1. Give us $2. Don't give us $2. Give us $5. Don't give us $5. Give us a bunch of those Tolarian credits. I don't know.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. What's the ear guy's money?
The ear guy's money.
You guys know what I'm talking about. Anyway, don't
Gold
give us
Press Latinum.
There we go. Give us real money. Go help and support this little venture. And patreon.com/StarTrekPod. If you guys give us at least $2, you guys get access to our Slack channel. We got a bunch of awesome people there already chatting. And there are hype squad.
Hype it up.
Shout out to Karen.
And
we also got other cool goals. If we get a certain number of patrons, I'm going to shave this thing off. I'm going to shave all my hair. I'm going to go full Picard.
I'm going to shave my head
okay,
too.
Be specific. How many patrons and by when?
100 patrons. We got 2 weeks left, I think, as far as I understand. By episode 5.
Right.
2 weeks. Tell your friends.
By the end of episode 5 airing.
Yeah.
So that night.
And if we hit 200 by the end of the season, I'll do an undercut and put the comb on the back of my head.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be exciting. Grant's going to shave his head. Mariah's going to shave her head. I'm going to shave my head basically because it's a Thursday.
Yep.
And then Mike's not going to shave his head.
He does a lot of work.
Shave my goatee.
So we also got some stickers if you guys do the $5 patron. So
we'll send you a bunch. They came out a lot smaller than I thought they were going to. So.
Anyway, support us. Go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod. All right, let's get into it.
All right, before we start talking about the difference between Northern Romulans and Southern Romulans and the Tal Shiar and the Zatbosh and all the other weird shit in this episode of Picard, we have some listener reviews, brand new listener reviews.
Ooh.
Who wants to read some of these?
Are they on the rundown?
Yes.
Any volunteers?
I got it.
They are on the rundown that I typed up in Google Docs.
Husher 315 says, hailing frequencies open. Running a podcast myself, I have a difficult time finding an hour or two to listen to other shows. But from the minute the Discovery Pod came up on my long-range sensors, I've made the time to listen to their show. What I really dig is that each host has a different level of Star Trek knowledge. Some have enough to get accepted to the Daystrom Institute with honors, while others have only started watching since Discovery came out. This adds a really fun dynamic. The Disco Pod also has an awesome Patreon program that is absolutely worth giving a couple of dollars to. After just one episode, I subscribed. Can't wait to hear the crew's thoughts on the rest of the season of Picard, and looking forward to the reviews of Discovery Season 3. 5 stars!
Woo!
Thank you.
Nice.
Husher 315.
Sweet.
We have another review. Who wants to read that?
I'll do that one. It's a short one. From James Worm says, great dynamic and discussion. I've really enjoyed the group assembled for this podcast and the range of Trek fandom and perspective. A positive show that shares their love for Star Trek. 5 stars.
Whoop, whoop. All right. Thank you for those reviews, please. If you haven't reviewed the pod, please jump on Apple. We need those 5-star reviews. That really gives us a lot of visibility on Apple. Okay. So does anybody have any hot takes about this episode of Picard?
He scared me.
You threw me off. Hot takes!
All right.
You jumped.
You scared me. That's like too much action. We're too close. We need a bigger studio.
We can put our arms around each other here.
Patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Please help us get a bigger studio.
Oh, man.
A larger table.
All right. Who wants to give me their hot take first? On episode 3 of Picard.
Clyde, you weren't here last week. Kick
yeah.
me off.
Yeah.
You're in Perry.
Hot takes. What the hell am I watching?
Oh, no. Clyde does not speak for the podcast.
No. Seriously. I'm all for Trek. I think there were some really interesting things about this episode. I was excited toward the end to see the ship, finally.
Okay. Yeah, you like ships.
I like ships.
Did you like the design?
You know what? I did. I mean, I thought it was cool. It's a ship that I would imagine that Cristobal Rios would have.
Yeah.
It's not a... you know, it's not a Star Trek ship with, you know, hundreds of people on it.
I think it had some nacelles on it, didn't it?
Something, which some cool. wings, but so it was cool. Yeah. So I was happy to see the ship. I'm still trying to figure out what crew they're putting together.
Okay.
So I'm trying to give it some time. It was a little slow moving. Some good things, some things I'm curious about. I was a little disappointed that Laris is not on this ship. I'm really disappointed about this.
I thought she was going to die.
Well, why the hell are they leaving her back, her and the guy back at the chateau? Yeah. Lots of people show up with guns, and you're going to be like, we're leaving, y'all. Good luck.
We're definitely going to get to that.
Okay.
They'll come back. But the hero moment.
But all in all, I am committed to giving it a full, like, chance. I'm going to be patient, but I feel like we're building again. So,
You're going to watch the whole season with us? You're not going to just quit?
I'm not going to quit. I'm not a quitter. I've never quit on Star Trek yet. So.
You're under contract. You're not allowed to. So don't even think it.
I'm going to go next.
All right.
Do it.
I'm kind of with you a little bit. I liked this one a lot better than episode 2. It cleaned up a lot of stuff I didn't care for in episode 2. It moved faster. There were some people on our Slack who were saying that they wish some of the scenes kind of were allowed to breathe a little more. And upon thinking about it, I can... Grant doesn't agree, judging by your bulging eyes.
Let me just lower these eyebrows. I don't know how those went up so high, but more breathing?
No, but I feel it. I feel like there was a lot of cross-cutting here. But that really didn't bother me in the moment. I feel like we're finally done with the preamble stage. A Picard getting, like, the call to adventure. He's finally answering the call. Why it took 3 hours to get him to answer the call and move the fuck out of the vineyard in such a languid and complicated way, I don't know, but here we are.
We can say fuck. They said it on the show.
Twice.
We're finally establishing some of the structure of this show with the full cast of characters now finally in place. Picard on his ship with his new crew. We've been seeing the promos for a while now. That's good. Got the whole cast together, finally. The dialogue, Michael Chabon, I'm sorry, is still mostly hot, artless garbage.
Well, that's harsh.
That's one thing that's one of my things. I need good dialogue in a TV show. It's all very surface. It's very banal. That's a big bummer. The slight exception was the scenes with our rogue Captain Rios. His scenes had a little extra salt here and there with the dialogue, which was fun. I like the whole cast. Michelle Hurd as Raffi is a welcome presence. Mm-hmm. I want to see more of her toking her special flower, you know, and drinking and playing video games. I know she wasn't playing video
games. Was she drinking out of a vase?
It's a future cup.
I was like,
it's a future cup.
Props department went to the vase.
I like her on the ship. I wasn't so sold on the rock.
It was a little forced at the beginning. I love seeing Jonathan Del Arco back as Hugh. He was a wonderful character in TNG, and I think
Grant's like, who?
the age version we get of him here really feels right, you know? Love his hair.
Who's this guy?
The director of the Reclamation Project.
Yeah, Grant.
Oh, the Borg dude?
Yeah.
The Borg dude who was all like, I'm a Borg, they are just using me. But also I'm a boss who has people under me? They're not fully using you.
A little confusing.
Bit of a promotion there.
One weird thing. I liked a lot of the scene with Soji and the de-Borgified Romulan storyteller, like with the puzzle and all that.
That
puzzle
was
pretty cool.
Yeah.
But if the whole...
It got weird.
If the whole mythology is the news conversation, is really supposed to be about how this show and like the new Star Trek shows as a whole are trying to reflect our culture and our news and our political cycle in 2020, that's fine. But if that's the case, that was a pretty like heavy-handed way to tell us about that.
What do you mean? Star Trek has never been heavy-handed with with causes and things going on in
the
world.
I wouldn't bring this up unless it was just so blatant, you know? And by today's TV standards, I mean, there needs to be a little more art. And it needs
can't
to
get
be
away with the guys that are half black, half white faces. Right, anymore.
Exactly. It needs to be a little more subtle. I mean, That could have been done a little more elegantly. I mean, just to spell it out like that. Like, this show is about today, sheeple. You know, it was a little much. You know, Patrick Stewart and the showrunners have done a lot of press expressing that the show in grand Star Trek tradition is commenting on our culture and the social political environment that we're living in. while also trying to offer hope and inspiration, which I hope we'll get on this show soon.
I'm not feeling it yet, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Not feeling any of the hope.
Well, we're seeing definitely the social commentary, like the themes of xenophobia, nationalism.
Picard is hope. He's the one, he's that last line of hope. He's going to go rescue a robot and save the day.
It's interesting you say that because the show is also checking Picard and his privilege here, which also is reflecting our current culture. We saw scenes of that last week, some scenes of that this week, but that's all great. Just write it better. Like more artistry, less turning to the camera and going, this is about today, y'all. But yeah.
This is about today, y'all.
Mostly liked it. Was the camera on her at that time?
I had to switch screens quickly.
I mean, but I don't know. It was fun. Mostly liked it. Like I said last week, I'm kind of treating this like a B-plus level superhero movie. So, engage.
It's a long hot take.
Do you want to go first? You want me? Or what you want?
I mean, I feel like I'm the only one who's still like down with the show. I enjoyed
it.
I mean,
I'm down with it.
I'm down with it.
I got issues.
I'm down with it.
I'm not running to watch it, but I'm down with it.
I agree. The dialogue is clunky. I think they're, you know, I watched a couple of scenes and wished there had been like one more take. You know, like, I don't know. I
wish there were. All this seemed like first draft script, really. It was just placeholder dialogue. But go ahead.
Sorry. Anyway. But I'm enjoying.
Anyway, you fucker.
You were just anyway, so mad with this
so
show.
So mad. I love the world building. I've been really enjoying that. I like seeing what the future looks like. I will say the future of mental health looks very grim if this poor woman is stuck in the desert just smoking her flowers, and that's how she deals with all of her problems. I think she has a gambling thing. Anyway, predictus based on how she reacted.
Is that because her computer had a pop-up for gambling?
Well, that the free world thing, I'm assuming free world is the Vegas of the future.
Do you think he's even there, or she's just like, can you just take me to gambling town? And she's like, totally there, but she's just like, nah.
Maybe. Anyway, I think they've set up some interesting things. I'm excited to get off of Earth and to see some more stuff and what's happening. I think what's going on in the Borg cube is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I think the themes that they're trying to put together and we'll eventually get to in Mariah's theory quarter of the podcast. But yeah, I'm just obsessed with production design, and I can see the detail and the expensiveness of this show.
Yeah.
They've spent money. And so as someone who enjoys seeing the behind the scenes of stuff, like this show is like candy to me.
Best looking Borg cube I've ever seen.
So amazing. Good.
So Mariah, you said that you like what the kind of the future looks like. Do you feel like it's in line with what we thought the future Federation would be from the other shows?
You know, I think it's speaking to the fact that no thing is impenetrable by darkness.
Huh. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think that's what they're trying to highlight this season is like we can have this idealized, you know, democracy, federation, but there's always going to be opportunities for things to happen, people to be corrupted. And sometimes the corruption happens to perfectly normal people and they don't know it's happening, which I think is going to be the case with the person who is in charge of Starfleet and this Commodore person. Anyway.
Commodore Shades.
Whoop, whoop. We forgot our sunglasses.
Hey, guys. Anyway, I have ill-fitting glasses.
Hot take,
how are you?
Hot take for me is I'm still interested. I do agree that the dialogue could be better.
It's hot garbage.
And I have hope that it gets better because they did release all three of these at once for their premieres. And so I'm wondering if maybe the first three were perhaps written by a smaller team to get it approved. And then they hopefully expanded to a writer's room because I do think Star Trek is best with a writer's room.
Apparently they're doing this in chunks in terms of the big creative tasks. Like the director was the same for all these. And Michael Chabon headed the writing room for all three of these. Mm-hmm. And then there's a new, not necessarily creative team, but they're handing the baton to another corner of the creative team.
Better
for the
team?
For the next three.
Stronger team?
And I want to say Frakes is either a part of the next team or the one after that.
I don't know if that gives me faith.
Dude. First Contact is great. He directed that, and I'm looking forward to Frakes. He did some great Discovery episodes,
too. He did do some really good Discovery.
I will say the thing I love about Frakes is I feel like he really gets the tone the pacing and the just the ethos of Trek, having been in front of the camera and behind the camera. So I'd hope that if Frakes is leading this, then we're going to get back to that, I don't know, that feeling where we're inspired by Trek. And I don't feel very inspired right now, I'll be honest.
Grant, that leaves you.
Oh, is it time for my hot take?
It's for Grant.
See,
hot take!
Oh my God! didn't see that. I think that... I don't know what to say beyond what you guys really covered. Ultimately, I felt this was quite a big step above what episode 2 was. Episode 2 for me was lousy. Here, I thought that the dialogue is amazing. I hate the production design. And
really?
What did you say?
You hate the production
design. No, I'm kidding. I'm just going the opposite of you guys.
Being an antagonist.
I thought that this was had a little bit more of that energy. I did actually find that the writing wasn't as dumbed down as in the second episode, which is not necessarily glowing praise.
No.
But there was a little bit more cleverness with how scenes were constructed.
Really?
I felt that there was actually a bit of emotional payoff when they were... splitting between the scenes of Soji figuring out the puzzle thing and then the Romulan Borg lady starting to cry. That scene in conjunction with the thing going on with Picard.
The interrogation.
I was like, okay. The interrogation part was still boring. But how they were kind of splicing those two together had this kind of crescendo of energy that I think I need more of that kind of energy going on in this
I like
show.
That too. There was more verve here, yeah.
Yeah. Ultimately, I'm glad that they're finally going into space. I mean, I can't say that they did it. Like, it happened at the very end of the episode. Yeah. They finally are on a ship.
Too.
And I'm like, man, we had to wait that long and... still, like 20-25 minutes into this episode, I was like, why are we spending so much time trying to convince what's her name, Rafi? Mm-hmm. To like,
yes.
Like, we get it. I got that she's supposed to be an opposition force, but
it drug. I got the point. It was really slow in kind of putting this team together.
Did I smoke the dragon flower or whatever the fuck? Like, why do I feel like... It was just so funny when you said, like, scenes need more time to breathe. I'm like, nope, choke that one the fuck out.
I didn't say that. Somebody in our Slack said that. And going back, I can see some scenes I would have liked being stretched out a little more, especially when Soji is talking to the storyteller. I wanted to know, really, what was her intention in going and talking to this person and... exactly what does this person see in Soji that made her freak out so much? But
we probably could have gotten to the news thing a little bit more eloquently if we had spent more time in that.
Yeah.
Well, I do feel like what we saw with Soji, we're seeing a little bit more that she's a pawn of what seems like multiple parties that are kind of using her as a bit of an experiment, are aware of what's going on with her.
Mm-hmm.
And yet... her kind of the realization of what's going on is a lot more intriguing to me this episode than the previous episode. I agree with you guys, that whole tarot card reading thing that was going on with the Romulan lady was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And Picard's finally in space with a ragtag crew, and Kim Pine is evil. She is evil. We all
Agnes
know it.
Agnes Girardi.
We're going to get to the theory in a little bit.
Okay.
Let's dive a little deeper into this episode. I have a few bullet points here, guys. Tell me your opinion on Picard's new crew on La Serena. Got Rafi, got Captain Rios, Dr. Girardi. The holograms, is it one hologram or two?
It's one who does a lot of stuff.
Okay, because I felt he the first one was identified as
a medic.
EMH, the emergency medical hologram, like on Voyager. And then the other one who was fixing the ship was identified as something else. But
he suddenly had an Irish accent.
He said emergency hologram.
They looked the same. Anyway,
did they just have different accents?
I don't know if they had different
whatever
accents.
Whatever it is, it's bad. Like, I'm not a fan of... like. Why not bring in another character? I think when we've seen this done in previous Trek, the the EMH becomes its own character, a part of the crew. Now we've got the same actor playing the same thing.
It kind of smacks of we didn't have the budget to hire another actor for the entire season.
Obviously, do.
I'm saying I'm not buying they don't have the budget for this.
I think.
But it feels
that way.
We're
going to get into Mariah's theory corner later.
Okay.
Wait. Let's do it. Well, can we do it for this part now?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think they're trying to talk about the fact. So, that book that he picks up off the chair is The Tragic Sense of Life, which...
Oh, I didn't notice that book.
You didn't notice the book?
He was reading the book.
I didn't notice that book the five times they showed it.
Yeah.
So, if you all don't know, it's by Miguel de... I'm going to slaughter it. It is a Spanish philosopher. But it explores sort of religious belief and the duality and the tension between faith versus reason, which is a classic Star Trek trope. And so, I think we're going to go back to my favorite topic of determinism versus free will, as well as the idea that people can have these two competing facets to themselves. And so I have a theory that the reason that these holograms look like him is something to do with his reason versus faith. And he needs, like, the reason, the computer, to battle with him and to be the other side when he is maybe a person of faith.
Can I ask you guys a dumb Star Trek question that I don't really understand?
Shoot.
If it's a hologram... how is it tangible to the degree that it can pick up medical instruments, insert them in him, pull shrapnel out of his body, and then just also phase out that's as
what,
a light beam?
That's what holograms can do in Star Trek.
Star Trek
they
magic.
Can interact
They're
with
solid
the world.
State, yeah.
So is it a robot?
No.
It's
photons.
Wait, can you wave your hands through it?
No.
It's photon energy that can, at certain points, become solid.
Yep.
But it is run by a computer program, not a computer programmed device.
Yeah, you have to understand. So I think it really was in TNG. We saw this, the holodeck, right? And the holodeck is this place where you can walk in, and even though it's hologram, you are interacting in this world that is fully kind of solid.
Yeah. You can fuck anybody you want.
You can.
You can kill people in there.
Yeah. It's this whole world. And so what happens is the EMH, these emergency medical holograms, have basically become the same thing, only with these hollow emitters placed throughout the ship. So in this case, this guy is a solid state hologram who can function. And it originally was supposed to be in an emergency when your doctor has been incapacitated, unavailable. It runs temporarily to help you out in situations.
But Rios is such a lone wolf, and he has nobody to help him, so his emergency holograms are always on doing stuff around the ship.
And they're him because he's also lonely. There's this idea of not only who you are as your identity, and like you're saying, Mariah, this like split personality, the multifacets of the individual self, right? But doesn't this also, in a way, kind of speak to this idea of what is an individual? If we're already exploring this with synthetics, mm-hmm. potentially having a degree of consciousness that should be recognized and accepted and respected as life, are they maybe alluding to that in the different iterations that he can have a conversation with this hologram being, and maybe that has its own thought patterns that can react to him? And maybe Alexa and Siri are real people, guys.
Be nice to them.
What you're saying about the holograms having sentience has been covered before in Voyager. Mm-hmm. That was a big, long arc with the Doctor character. And we got to a certain place with it that seemed pretty definitive that holograms can be sentient and they can grow and learn because that's what their programming does, and they can be changed by people and the actions around them. I think we're getting more than a retread here of that mm-hmm. with what you brought up. But the idea you brought up about the holograms representing his duality, they covered that theme pretty well in Discovery.
What do you got there?
It's a tiny little
Michael. This is the only Michael Burnham toy I could find on the internet. My thumb is bigger than it.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Let's see
if we can do close cam here.
Yeah.
Michael Burnham! Oh, close cam's not focusing.
Yeah, you gotta focus that, buddy.
All right.
But yeah, we've seen that theme in Discovery so much of the past two seasons.
The fact that they really smack you in the face with this book, and that's like the main theme of the book.
It's going to happen, yeah.
Well, I, but I mean,
I think I also had a slightly different take on the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a synopsis that said it's a sense of eternal life, and the purpose that a person has can become futile and, you know, futile mm-hmm. and meaningless mm-hmm. it without this idea of eternal life. And so that made me start to think of, well, are we looking at whether or not, again, to your point, this idea of, is there kind of life after death? And if not, particularly for a synthetic, then is life just pointless and futile? And then that brings in the whole idea of the Boar, right? If there isn't anything, if it's just life, then is everything futile?
We do see that Rios talks about his previous captain who died, and he kind of still has PTSD from seeing him. So,
yeah, but didn't you like the part where he goes, robot, hologram, other person, I have PTSD. Like, it was like, Shabam!
I'm telling you. Shabam! Oh, yeah. But my point there was maybe he understands more than most how precious life is and how it has an end date or an expiration date. So maybe he is obsessed with his legacy and trying to transfer that on to these photonic beings. Maybe that's where we're going.
And he just has a tragic sense of life.
But a good beard.
But he looks very dark and mysterious, and he has a nice accent and beautiful abs. So no one's going to care.
He has a cat?
So your question, though, Mike, about the crew, I think
Little Mermaid
he
action?
Might be my favorite part of the
He's
crew.
My favorite.
Right? I'm not sure that I'm sold on anybody else on the crew, but I kind of like him.
But aren't we just so conditioned to like this?
The Han Solo rogue captain?
The rogue captain and, oh,
the bad boy.
He's a tough bad boy who has shrapnel, but he'll put his sweater on his bloody body and not, no, you're not,
because I'm
that's
a
so gross,
dirty, dirty captain.
Oh, I didn't have it on you. I didn't have the camera on you for that, but you were looking right at me and I felt very uncomfortable.
Okay.
You're welcome.
I don't know. It's just like, oh, I get it. You're the bad boy.
Well, maybe I like that he's Latinx too. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, I'm a big fan of the team up, right? So this was a bit of a, the formation, the let's bring these people together. I really enjoyed the way that kind of unfolded in Discovery. And we in Discovery, we got to see all these people who were really experts. You saw why they were a part of the team. And even as the show went on, we got to see, you know, more and more people come together. You've got this expert team. This is a ragtag bunch of characters, and I'm not sure that I would follow these guys anywhere.
Maybe that's what...
Especially without security clearance.
Maybe that's
dun, dun, dun.
Where the show wants us to be in relation to these characters right now, so we can grow to love them, and they'll grow beyond their tropes.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the next batch of characters to show up and really run this ship.
Okay, I got a question. And this is... We're also talking about the characters here. Is Picard a dick?
I'm curious where you're going with this. I didn't think so.
He hasn't spoken to Raffi, his like number one on his ship after the Enterprise, for 14 years. And then it's all like, hey, go do this mission with me now, bro. Plus, he leaves Laris and the other homie at home after getting attacked. And they're potentially going to get attacked again. What the fuck?
But they got that sweet, like, freaking closet full of guns now.
Yeah, that was hot.
Yeah, how many Should've guns do we have under them. This
right?
table?
Why not bring those with you? You are going into whatever kind of battle. You bring those guns with you.
But it is interesting
they
that...
They got to protect the grapes.
It is interesting that we got Picard being dressed down so bad by the Admiral. And then he was kind of like, oh, you don't remember? You don't know who I am? I'm so famous. When he went to the Starfleet mm-hmm. kiosk. Uh-huh. And here... someone who he thought would follow him in an instant is like, I'm not going with you, even though she does. So it is interesting that we're getting this, I didn't think we would get this take where Picard kind of has to check his privilege a bit.
Well, I think they have to do it a little bit, right? Because he's been out of the game for 14 years. Like, can any of us remember, I'm trying to think of any, like, equivalent in today's society, but like, prominent, you know, figures in politics from 14 years ago that weren't, you know, like president or vice president, you know, those sort of things. And like they fade in existence, but they still think they're very important. And, you know, will be those people who walk in and are, what do you mean you don't know who I am? Give me a reservation, right. You know, or the one hit wonder, you know, of whenever. I think we're seeing him have to come to see the consequence of not being involved for 14 years, of really taking that step back, because we haven't seen him be like Picard the activist for 14 years. You know, what happened in that time frame? He, you know, it seems like he literally locked himself up from society, stayed at his chateau, made some dope wine, but then like...
And then had the audacity to bitch about like not liking that life the whole time.
Right.
Like 14 years, you made this commitment to this. Now, you guys certainly know better than I do about how this Picard meshes up with the TNG series. But when I'm watching this, I like your question, like, is he a dick? They sure seem to be making me feel like this was your, it was she was like essentially his number one on the ship. And he didn't talk to her while she's hanging out in the desert right down the street or just a blip zap
after
away.
After his monumental decision cost her everything in
her
career.
She lost her job.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of it, though, was he lost his job, too. He overplayed his hand. Neither one of them thought that that was going to happen. And he's been struggling with this. I think my concern with this is, this is what I was worried about when they said they were doing a Picard show, right? Because I think about when we first started doing Discovery and we're talking about who's your favorite captain, and we're always like, we love Picard. And you have this memory of Picard being this incredible, wise, powerful captain, right? One of the best captains ever. Now, we've basically gone 14 years in the future, and he's an old, shallow shadow of the captain we know. Like, it's almost in these first three episodes, they've torn down the very memory that we have of him. And you're like, is he a jerk? Is he conceited? Is he arrogant? And the question is, well, we're all left to believe, well, a little bit, you know, but I think he's struggling with the fact that he thought he was something. He remembers, you know, the savior of the Borg and all these things he's done. And he's largely faded into the background and no one... It looked at him as relevant. The last thing that they have to remember him by is this rant on this interview that he did recently.
It is an interesting and unexpected place to put Picard in and to see where he goes from there. It's kind of rough to see.
I think he's having to learn the lesson that you can't assume people are going to do the work for you. Because I think the captain is still there that we know and we love, because I think you had to be all of those things to be that captain, right? To make the choices that he made for them on all of their missions. You have to be a little egotistical and all, you know, arrogant to believe that you can do all of those things. And I think he thought his final act of arrogance was, they'll never get rid of me. And then when they did, it shattered his ego. And instead of saying, how can I take this, like, what's happened to me, and maybe become, like, you know, if we were talking about modern day terms, like the activist who's like constantly talking about Romulan rights, or like, you know, moving forward with this and proving that he was of those values. I think it crushed him so much he needed to just retreat.
You know, you said something earlier, Mariah, that really had me thinking, was you talked about the one hit wonder. And I've got a couple friends who've played professional sports. And one of the things that they say is, there's nothing more irrelevant than a retired sports star.
Yeah.
And I think what they've learned is, no matter how long you've played in whatever league you've been in, almost the minute that you retire, you become irrelevant. And the longer you're retired, the longer you are irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're seeing with Picard. He's been retired for 14 years and he's largely faded. They don't think about him anymore, right? And he's struggling with this, but I've done all these things. And it's like, and I think it's interesting to think about how we are, because that is how we are in our society. The minute that you've faded,
not relevant anymore,
then we're not thinking about you.
Yep.
And all that stuff that you did, that was 14 years ago.
Right.
Well, one thing that I'm wondering then is, how do you guys feel about the legacy of Picard? Like, does this show feel like it is fairly and accurately portraying the legacy of Picard to you guys?
Sure.
Is this where you thought he should go from the kind of the storyline that
I really
left off with?
I really had no expectations. I just wanted a good story, but it's unexpected, but it lines up. It lines up okay with canon. It doesn't break the canon or anything like that.
I'm expecting greater things. Like, I'm almost invested now because I need to see this hero kind of rebound from where they are today.
Right. That's where they want us to be.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was like, I'm going to get real nerdy for a second.
But
please
do.
Like, it's like, if you think about, like, even, like, the Odyssey, right, was essentially he was like a war hero that was sad that he wasn't a war hero anymore. And he went on this adventure to like reprove himself.
Right.
And so I think we're going to have to go on this journey to figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, getting nerdy with what nerds. Nobody likes nerds on this show.
That's not true.
What? All right. I'm going to take a look at what was next on Mike's questions for us here. So Raffi's insistence that the Romulans were behind the Mars attack, but Picard says he doesn't, that doesn't make sense since the ships are being built there to help the Romulans. What do you guys think? Do you think the Romulans self-sabotaged?
Wait, I don't think I fully followed.
So Raffi, when Picard is explaining like, oh, this thing happened on Mars.
Yeah.
And she's like, the Romulans did it. And he's like, well, why would they essentially kill themselves?
Yeah, because on Mars, the ships that were being created on Mars are being created to ferry the Romulans out of their dying planet. And then the synths attacked and blew up all the ships.
But this was the hardcore
the Zatbash
sect. Yeah.
Well, Raffi is saying the Tal Shiar did this. And Picard is saying, of course they didn't. They're Romulans, and these ships were being made to save their people. Why would they blow them up?
And she's all like, but I think those Romulans know something about Romulans, and this is why they were letting it go.
She read it on Reddit.
I think
a lot of Reddit theories on this show.
Reddit theories, and then the triangle tarot cards, essentially, I think were an interesting parallel to see that she's sort of future mythologizing about why the Romulans would do this from the Tal Shiar's perspective. And then, you know, we have what's her name? The main lady on the show that Soji just flew out of my head. Yeah. Soji, you know, is very interested in what she's kind of putting together. And then we get that sort of last, I was like, does she not know what's coming? Like, is it not a standard deck that there's like a, you know, like if it's
the death card.
The death card, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, it was interesting.
You brought up Soji. So what does the Romulan storyteller tarot card lady calling Soji The destroyer. Mean.
Gozer the destroyer or whatever.
Yeah.
It was.
Like, is Soji a Borg, or was the storyteller referring to some like ancient Romulan myth? That
Seb Shinab, right? Seb Shineb, the destroyer.
Well, I think it's interesting because she wasn't the only one. At the exact same time, the, you know, Zatva or Tal Shiar, whoever that.
Zatbash.
The Romulan guy tied to a chair who's about to incinerate himself.
KGB Romulan? Yeah.
Yes. I mean, he said the same thing, right? He said, the destroyer. Mm-hmm. She's the destroyer. I don't know that we know what that means. I'm going to take a wild guess that it means she's not actually the destroyer, but it's some type of...
Red herring?
Not so much a red herring, but a misunderstanding of the mythology.
Oh, yeah. Because that never happens.
That never happens. That's not a trope.
I think it's interesting, too, because they're talking about, like, this Romulan in particular, if you're watching, who's on our screen, but it's the one who was playing with the tarot triangles. She was on the ship when that Borg cube essentially cut off from the
collective.
The collective. I was like, the mothership is not the correct word. The collective. And so I'm wondering if she is having a flashback to the destroyer like maybe there was another sister or the original, like were there original twins made and these are the second like 2.0 twins, right? And like something happened to cause the collective to disconnect and this cube to destroy itself.
First off, my favorite performance.
So good.
Was her. I thought she was fantastic in every scene she did.
She looks really familiar. The when we're talking about the Romulan lady.
I saw a picture of her side by side with some TNG picture of her. I figured she's some character from like some bit part in some TNG thing.
Oh yeah, if you're watching on YouTube, let us know. We're totally dropping the ball if she is a TNG character.
I thought maybe she had to. It was one of those little like clickbait articles, or clickbait.
People like recurring roles.
There was one of those about David Paymer last week. Has David Paymer been on Star Trek? Yes. And you read the article? No, he hasn't.
Maybe that was actually the case.
Yeah.
But I thought that when she was referring to her as the destroyer, I don't necessarily know what she could mean. And it could be her first impulse is that is a bad thing, but it could also be a destroyer, breaker of chains, mother of dragons kind of whole Daenerys thing. Like, who knows that she could be the one who
liberator
is the destroyer of this idea that androids can't also be considered sentient life. She could be the destroyer of norms, right? Or maybe she could be the one who finally does take down the Borg or this evil sect of the Romulan, the Val Kalashi.
I like that idea, but she called Soji the destroyer and said it with fear and anger.
Maybe she's afraid because she's part of the Val Kalachis.
The Val Kalachis.
That's what I'm going to guess they're called. I don't remember.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't be afraid if the people who are supposed to protect you are going to be destroyed, right? So if the mythology is that this person is going to come in and take away the Romulan KGB, and you are someone who's lived under the KGB for a long time, like if you think about like under communist Russia, you lived under that for so long, and the idea of it going away can be scary. And so maybe that's why.
But then again, leading back into my part of my theory, I'll go back to the Kim Pine is evil thing. I don't remember.
Agnes Girardi.
Dr. Agnes Girardi.
You did this last podcast all the time. It was killing me.
She's always Kim Pine from Scott Pilgrim. That's all I'm going to remember her as forever until the end of time.
Allison Pill.
But going back to what I was kind of rough theorizing previously, what if she was constructed as this sort of device that is essentially like the Borg? What if we can make synthetics so lifelike that they can start taking over Invasion of the Body Snatchers style, and we have them, but there is an underlying program that we can control them at any point that we want? So if we want to make them fight off a bunch of Romulans that are trying to destroy them, suddenly we flick a switch and we control her and she fights off all these Romulans. She can be controlled by an outside force that makes her dangerous and makes her unreliable as a person in society, right? And if she's being in a way assimilated, then she could be a destroyer of all life that she's taking over as a bunch of synthetics. Mm. That they're like they're Borg 2.0, right?
Right. Yeah.
Wouldn't it essentially be that?
Yeah. That's kind of been an idea that I've also had these past couple episodes. The Borg 2.0. Maybe Soji is Borg 2.0. That's why we're sitting together. That's why we're wearing the same colors.
We're Soji and Dash. I think you're the dead one.
I think it's an interesting point because one of the things that, you know, we talk about first contact, and I'm reminded that at one point we see Data interacting with the Borg Queen, mm-hmm. right? And so
it's very sexy.
I mean, there was
wanted Data.
Bad. So I'm just wondering if we are looking at this potential kind of hybrid between the synthetic and the Borg and this Borg 2.0.
Yeah.
So that might be something we see. I also want to bring us back to the question that you asked. Has Ramda been on Star Trek before? I mean, a quick search.
Okay.
And it doesn't look like it.
Okay.
This is a brand new character.
All right.
It's possible. I do know it has happened before where actors play other characters and then
she was probably just at the premiere hanging out with.
I'll go back
to click hole and check. I think that's pretty.
We need to know, Grant.
I mean, I looked at her IMDb and she's been in a bunch of other things, but not Star Trek.
All right.
So talking about the Borg, is it weird? I think it's really weird and telling that apparently there are only six Romulans that were ever assimilated.
That's very interesting.
And then they're all stuck in this Terry Gilliam movie, walking around going crazy.
Yeah.
12 monkeys.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if these all six of them were on this last ship that came in and broke it. So were like the Romulans just so like, can't assimilate.
They had too much Norton antivirus in their blood.
Wait. I feel like I was missing something because during the intense scene where she starts kind of freaking out and breaking down, tears are coming out as Soji's like, hey, remember your past that you were on that ship or whatever? And they're doing the quick cuts to the interrogation elsewhere. There was some other dude in the room, in the rubber room here, like flicking a gold Rubik's Cube or some shit. And was he like
was that the flicking black Romulan?
In code.
I was excited that there was a black Romulan. There's only been like one other.
Yeah, they killed the first black guy in the first episode, and this one's a bad guy.
I mean, it's.
I think
what's all of track record Star Trek.
I think all of the disassimilated, is that a word? Romulans in the room were going a little crazy with like,
but it seemed like
it was amping up.
Yeah, he was like flicking it like maybe in like some sort of like code that was like triggering
maybe
her to freak out, and
because Hugh did say grab him and take him out of here.
Yeah.
I thought it was because they grabbed the guy who didn't have his gun locked up properly.
Yep. Oh.
Oh, that's why she grabbed the gun.
Yeah.
And tried to
tried to kill herself. Yeah.
Got it.
And then Soji essentially doxed herself by like reaching across the room and grabbing that gun at lightning speed. Mm-hmm. Everyone should have been like, "You're a robot."
Yeah. But I think everybody kind of knows. She's the only one who doesn't know.
She's the only one who does not know.
is this some even bigger, like, fucked up experiment?
Yes.
What was that Jim Carrey movie where they're all spying on him? He's the one.
Truman Show. Yeah, Truman Show. All this Borg cube is all on a holodeck. Okay, so y'all remember Hugh?
Oh, man. I had to do some Googling. It had been a minute.
You remember Hugh? He loved Geordi. He was a friend of Geordi.
I did. It took me a while to remember kind of the storyline, but I do remember Hugh.
Great TNG episode called iBorg. Hugh was the first...
Like iRobot?
Yeah.
iBorg?
Yeah. Hugh was the first Borg who left the collective and proved that if you sever yourself from the collective and you live long enough, you can become an individual again. And which set the stage for Seven of Nine and set the stage for all these other disconnected Borg that we're seeing in Picard. So it makes sense that he is on this ship and he is calling some shots. I like the actor, Jonathan Del Arco, his original performance in 3 episodes, I believe, of TNG. One was iBorg and the other one was a two-parter. He was amazing. Just such an emotional performance. And he seems a little darker here, a little edgier, but... I think it's it's a good call to have him here, and I hope we get a lot more of him.
I'm glad they're taking the eyepieces off. It's very helpful.
Yeah.
I thought that he was a little bit creepy in the beginning, where he's like, I've been watching you on my monitors to Soji. I'm like, oh, dude, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that because he's a throwback to TNG and specifically someone who has... a history with not only the Enterprise, but I imagine, I have to think back to the episodes that he interacted with Data as well, that he is a undercover hero-like character who might at some point sacrifice himself for Soji, right? That that he's going to be part of the story of her being rescued or brought back to the people who are really trying to care for her.
Yeah, he has... a great history, obviously, with the Borg, a great history of understanding what it takes to sever yourself from the Borg and become an individual. And he also has a deep history with Data and Data's brother, Lore. So he knows all about synthetics. He knows all about the Borg. There's definitely something cooking with this character that's going to be really deep to the core story.
Agreed.
Every time they show this Borg cube, do you guys notice they have like a 30-45 second scene of like, look at our special effects as we zoom through the hallway, zip around, whoopity doopity doo.
Yeah,
that's all pretty standard for like entering a Borg cube, though. I feel gotten that.
They started that in First Contact, the movie.
I was just like, are we gonna get this every single time?
Probably.
I like it. It's fun.
I mean, it's like the new Earl Grey.
There was no Earl Grey in this episode.
I know. They replaced it with all the references to that fucking book.
True.
that was actually the new Earl Grey.
Okay, so Dr. Girardi, Allison Pill, Kim Pine, meets with Commodore Cool.
Glasses.
Oh.
Outside.
Oh, cool.
What's that meme that like the glasses come down?
Oh, yeah. That's her.
Deal with it.
Some ill-fitting glasses, by the way. We don't see the
full... Did they just not finish her makeup in time for the shoot?
I feel like the glasses were there, like her eyebrows just made it weird with the glasses. Yeah. If she had some Devil Wears Prada, what's her name?
The kind big, of yeah.
glasses. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Meryl Streep. I can feel that.
So we don't see the full scene of her meeting with Commodore Cole, then Girardi shows up at Picard's house right after the shootout. Later, Raffi is all like, we didn't do a security check on her. So red herring, or is Grant's theory correct that Girardi is evil?
I heard Grant's theory, long, drawn out theory that she was the mastermind behind everything.
Long drawn. I'm not eloquent.
I'm just saying, but... I don't know that she's the mastermind behind everything, but I will say... Like, all of a sudden, a bunch of guys descend on the chateau, firing guns.
And she has a gun.
And she has a gun.
How did she get the gun?
And not to mention that...
She picked it up from the floor from a dead run.
You're at a point where you're like, oh, and let's just be honest.
Oh, I don't know how to shoot guns, you do.
We shoot everybody, and then they decide to hug. Who the hell is hugging right after this gunfight? And lo and behold... Right?
Have you never been in a gunfight, Clyde?
I've not really been in a gunfight, but you know what?
I really need a hug.
Your comment was so out of left field from what I expected.
I'm thinking, like, first of all, you don't have any idea. Nobody's like, check the perimeter.
You need a hug, buddy?
I don't. I'm good. But I'm looking at this and saying,
needs a hug.
Do you know if there are any more? And lo and behold, somebody comes in, they aim a gun, and oh, yeah, now we're going to have Dr. Girardi who shoots them, and we're going, okay, she's great. And people have to look around and go, that seemed a little convenient, no?
But yeah. Are they doing a double bait and switch? Are they now trying to make us think that she's evil? I don't know. I feel like she's pleasant girl next door, innocent. I'm just a pure scientist. And I think that this show has probably... ridden on this idealized idea. I don't know about those words. Anyway, of
Michael Chabon write this dialogue?
Stop scripting me, Chabon. Of scientists like being like good that they can kind of turn that on its ear. She's even wearing a cute little blue outfit. Evil.
Like a Smurf.
Evil. Look,
I think Allison Pill is a fantastic actress, and I could easily see her taking a part like this because it allows for her to play a more dynamic and at times sinister character.
You saw Snowpiercer when she's evil. Oh, yeah. She was the evil teacher there,
right? Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
So
there's got to be more to this character than just, you know, nervous all the time. Yeah.
Maybe she's like... being, you know, maybe she's not totally evil, but perhaps she has alternative goals. You know, like maybe she needs to get...
Like she's going to vote for Nader.
To Maddox. She needs to get to Maddox for something completely different. You know, maybe she needs something from him and she's found a way to now get that. And so she's trying to figure out a way to do that on her own.
I think you could possibly say that about everybody on Picard's new crew.
Like, oh, yeah, everyone has alternatives.
You were talking about Raffi. She wants to get to, what was it called? Fucktown? What is it?
That's what Grant was saying.
Free cloud. Yeah, for some reason.
I don't recall saying Fucktown. I did not say Fucktown.
Speaking of Fucktown.
You have said it twice.
Speaking of Fucktown.
Yes.
Oh, there's Spock Jr.
I just have one note here that says, Narek fucks.
He's 100% a fuckboy. He is.
Why would you say
booty call man? He wants her to shut up, and so he just goes, you know, I think I'm falling in love with you. Like,
right? She was like, oh, you believe me that like suddenly,
yes,
I Johnny mnemonic all this kind
fine.
Of information, and he's like, oh, believe you? I love you.
I love you because you're going to get me what I need in this world. And for my creepy sister to stop talking so close to his face.
What is the sexual energy between him and his sister?
I was like, is this?
I don't know, but I like it. She's so hot.
My goodness.
But is she like,
it was very weird.
Hot?
It was very incestuous.
They were very close. We all watched, I was like, what's going on?
We all watched and enjoyed five and a half seasons of Game of Thrones.
I don't remember watching Game of Incest.
Yeah,
there was quite a bit of there.
There was like two episodes of that.
They were very close. I can't imagine anyone being that close and having this conversation. I was curious of where it was going.
I feel too close to all of you right now.
I know.
Get me out of this table. Hey, you were right. I did read that this actor, this Freddie Highmore guy who plays Narek, did try out to be the new Spock. And they liked him so much, and they like Ethan Peck, but they wanted to keep him around. But Ethan Peck made a better Spock, so they hired him for Spock, and kept this guy around.
Got his name as Harry Treadway.
Right.
Is that?
No, you're right.
Okay.
I'm just calling him Freddie Highmore because he looks like Freddie Highmore.
I don't see him looking at all like Freddie Highmore. Yeah. They're white guys.
All white guys look the same, Grant. You didn't know that?
He's the doctor on the spectrum. That's what Hedy.
Do I look like Freddie Highmore?
I mean, you all look exactly the same. Oh.
He's not a white guy.
Where are we going with this?
No white.
I know. I'm sorry. Anyway.
I'm trying to figure out what is it about him that just seems so malicious to me. I think somebody said in the last podcast that
his eyes and his teeth.
He does have a Ramsay Bolton kind of vibe.
The patchy beard.
And I'm trying to figure out, like, is this just what I'm getting strictly from the show? Or is it because I've seen him in something else where he was sinister? And
his unsmiling dead eyes, I think, does it.
It's also like they put very specific like music in whenever he's talking or around. And he's always like very dark.
I was
going to
say
lighting.
He's lit a certain way too in every
He's lit like
scene.
A villain.
I'm going to say it right now. I'm in on this guy. I think he's more complicated than we think he is.
Oh, yeah. He's easily like a good guy who's trying to do something to like stop the Val Shiar.
Maybe that's like, why he's flirting with his sister.
Who's the character? Who's the character that we had this very same conversation with on Discovery Pod?
We did?
Burnham's...
Lorca.
No, that's you. You.
I love Lorca. No. I love the Freddie Highmore.
I love Lamp.
I enjoy the Lamp.
The Vok and... who was Vok?
Ash Tyler. Dreamboat, Tiger Beat, Ash Tyler.
We're looking at the Picard version of Ash Tyler is what I think we're looking at. Is he good? Is he bad? Will he be both? This is what we're looking at.
Right. Will he be two things at once?
Fair.
That's interesting. But I think that they're
he's cooler than Ash, though.
Such mustache twirly villains that they're probably trying to prevent something nefarious that's going on between Kim Pine and Soji, the robot that she built to destroy everything, and now she wants to go have a little check-in sesh.
Is there any chance that he's actually in love with Soji?
Yes.
Yeah.
You think so, Mike?
Yeah. I feel
like 48
she can kill
hours?
Like all
Thank
those
you, Mariah.
She can kill all those people in like 10 seconds.
Fuck yeah, I'm in love with her. He's conveying a lot of conflict here.
Okay.
Internal conflict. And I think he does really care for her.
You think he fell in love with her like in 3 minutes?
No, he's obviously been watching her forever, like
you
a creepazoid.
You obviously never had emotionally manipulative boyfriends, and this guy is not in love with
Thank
her.
You.
I don't understand women.
I agree that he's manipulative. I wouldn't say that there's goodness to his love.
Fuck
but
so.
I think that he does dig her.
Yeah. Oh, I think he is infatuated with her.
Yeah.
And I could see... Okay. I also could see his sister coming to a point where she almost tries to wait.
Threesome? Are we talking
threesome? Nope, not going there. What I'm saying is I think that we could get to a point where sister could try to kill Soji and he prevents that. I could see that.
Oh,
I could also see that, yeah.
Yeah, that's,
but that too is a bit of a trope.
Yeah, I think he probably has a little like, I'm wondering what their parent situation is. Because if, like, he needs to prove to, like, mommy and daddy that he can be a good little soldier, but then he has complicated feelings because now he's, like, into this girl.
Ooh, that's interesting. Are there some notable TNG Romulans that could be the parents of these guys.
Yeah.
You were talking about Tasha Yar's...
Tasha Yar's clone. Yeah, yes, who's half Romulan. Yep. Sela. Yeah, I think it's Sela. All right. Do we want to jump into some audience questions? Do we have any on the stream?
We do. Well, let's go ahead and quickly say, hey, if you guys are watching us on the stream, go ahead and put in some questions and comments right now, because I'll go ahead and bring up a few other things I wanted to discuss real quick before we do that, and then we can jump in and have a little list of them.
And make sure to tag them with the all caps POD.
Yeah, right, POD. But first off, I wanted to talk about the cold open. We didn't really talk about that.
Right.
But they re-showed
the
Mars attack in like a quick succession of clips, and then added a little bit of like the... Well, then they jumped into this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that them doing the quick succession of them to kind of say like this just happened and now this is like they really are trying to set this up as a Picard redemption story for us that we are supposed to just really like root for him. And I like their point of, is he a dick? Because I think that's completely to the point of, yeah, do we want to root for him? I don't know.
I mean, of course I do based on all the years I've been a fan.
You guys are fans though, right?
We're fans. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of like, do you deserve this? I don't know. Everyone else seems to revere
hopefully,
you.
Hopefully, like after this like three episodes of full preamble, hopefully we'll get to a point where you are rooting for him as a new viewer and you do feel that he deserves to be lifted up in this way.
Think about it like this. When we go back to Discovery, and you have all...
I was just going
to
say that.
When you have all these feelings about Pike, right? Mm. Like, that is how we felt about Picard.
Yeah.
Well...
Like, he actually, think about this. Amplify all your feelings about Pike by, like, 10. That is how we felt about Picard. Like, he was the guy.
I get it. You have some Narek infatuation.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is now we see that he's 14 years... kind of down. We are, there is a bit of redemption story that we're hoping like, okay, at this point, he's got to get back to that guy. Now it'll be interesting to see if the writers give us that or not.
But do you guys feel like when you see, like, if you remember the first few episodes or the first season, I guess, of Discovery, that we all kind of looked at that and thought it was a little bit dark, and like you guys were saying that it didn't feel like the Trek that you knew.
Agreed.
I enjoyed it. I thought the storytelling was really fun because it felt familiar to storytelling devices that I really like in modern storytelling. But I got a much better sense when we saw the second season of Discovery of what you guys were talking about like how Trek is supposed to be aspirational. Mm. And when I watched the first three episodes of this, I get a glimmer of what you guys weren't digging in the first season mixed with boringness.
Well, there was some aspiration in the first episode of Picard where he's talking about in the interview before it turns really bad and the interview, and the interviewer is really...
not picking up what he's putting down.
Trying to make a point of, oh, you tried to help our enemies. Like, no, there were lives. There weren't Romulan lives. There were lives. All life is precious. That is the Picard we know. That is the aspirational Picard that we know. And he still represents that. And back in the TNG days, the entire Federation, for the most part, represented that. And it seems like that's no longer the case. So... I think we are going to see Picard as being the beacon of light for Starfleet and the Federation, and inspiring not only his crew but hopefully the entire Starfleet and then Federation in this show.
Well said, Mike.
Okay. The one other thing I wanted to point out was JL.
Oh my! Yeah.
Are they always calling him JL?
No, no, that was only Rafi.
Really, hate
that was
this.
Not good.
Okay, I'm not the only one.
Hey, JL.
I mean, it just felt very forced.
Right? It didn't feel like
it didn't feel forced.
Yeah.
A lot of the Rafi stuff felt really forced.
I just thought that we've spent seasons after seasons with everyone going, Jean-Luc.
Yeah.
Right, Jean-Luc.
Captain.
Captain Jean-Luc.
Like, or Picard, even.
Yeah, Captain Picard. Like, and then now we've got this person who's going, I know JL. I know JL. And I'm like, please stop saying JL.
I understand the attempt to make this so different from TNG that people are calling him JL. Like, all those instincts to do things like that are good.
but the way they're doing it, it's not good. although these uniforms are kind of dope.
Yeah,
I was thinking it was kind of a nice upgrade there.
Yeah. Okay, you guys want to go some questions?
Let's do questions, it.
Questions, comments from the live audience.
Pod, first one is going to come to us from Chippy, who says...
Chippy?
Chippy.
Chippy. Oh, Chippy.
Yeah, Karen. Do you think all the closeness he finally achieved by all good things with his crew was blown to bits by Data's death? Add depression, and this is where he's gone.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
I'm guessing she's referring to Picard and an episode in TNG called All Good Things.
That's the finale. And mm-hmm. the final shot of All Good Things, throughout the entire run of the series, all the major officers and the crew of the Enterprise get together every week for a poker game. And they always invite Picard, and he never shows because he wants to keep that separation from command and friendship. And finally, at the end, he shows up. And it's really just him telling them, you are my family,
yep.
and we're all family, and we'll always be together. So I guess what Karen is asking is the reason that he's not calling on Geordi and Worf and everybody to help him out in this situation. Is that because there's a rift between him and his old crew? Maybe. We are going to see him meet Picard and, Riker and mm-hmm. Troy.
Boy, are they dingling that. And yeah. Seven of Nine is supposed to be in this show yeah. somewhere.
She's going to be in episode 5.
What the fuck?
What do you guys think? Do you want to see a rift between Picard and his crew? No. I don't really think we should.
I don't. I'm hoping the reason is because it's like you want to protect your family.
That's the reason he gave last week.
And I think he is calling on, you know, this new character on Rafi because maybe there isn't as many years of a relationship there.
Doesn't give a shit about her.
That too, because he'd left her in the dust. But, you know, maybe it's more he is thinking of a character who could actually use the hand up, right? Like she's living not her best life. And so he's like, I know someone who could use this. I don't want to destroy the good life that my other crew has.
Well, I like that because I think he realizes that this is probably the biggest rogue adventure he's been on, right? So we've seen Star Trek captains bend the rules here and there and kind of just like walk the line just so slightly. He's absolutely on the other side of the line now. Mm-hmm. And if you bring in a Worf or Geordi, you bring in, you know, Riker, then they're basically throwing their careers away, yeah. right? Because they're on the other side. And if they're wrong, then they're way wrong. His crew is basically made up of outlaws and Dr. Girardi, who's probably a spy. So, I mean, if you're going to do this, it's kind of a good group to have.
All right, our next question is it's a little three-parter. This is from Carolyn K3, and then JC, and then Wasoha, who say, what about that phone call between Soji and her mom?
It was a different mom, right?
Is that her mom, or mom? Maddox, maybe using a face disguise?
Maybe.
About that theory. Yeah. And then Wasoha says, yeah, what is your theory? What's going on here?
I think it was an AI. I think it was the same actress who played Daj's mother when she did the same call. But yeah, I think it's just some kind of AI.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they're... Because all her memories, obviously, are fake of her family and growing up as a real girl.
Here's my theory. I think that there are a bunch of synthetics that have banded together and they've sent a couple of their most reliable synthetics out into the world as little sleeper cells, right? That's what Soji and Daj were. But when the Romulans bust in, they're like, where in the very first episode to attack Daj, they're like, where are the rest of them? And it's like a Sense8 from Netflix, that Netflix Sense8 show. It's kind of like that, where there's a collective of them that can all hive mind in together and like teach her to fight or some shit, right? Mm. But those guys are also able to kind of step in and replicate a mom figure on a phone call that also is so fucking boring, I guess it puts her right to sleep, like in some sort of hypnosis.
Well, I think they put her to sleep because they're like, ooh, you're figuring too much stuff out, go to bed.
Right.
But like,
that's what my mom does too.
Exactly. but I think, I'm wondering then if Soji and Daj actually knew each other. Do you know what I mean? Like they had a memory of a twin sister, but have never physically been in the same place.
Oh, right. That's good. Because the mom does mention Daj to right. Soji. But yeah, had
but they
met?
But they could all be implanted memories.
Implanted memory. Yeah. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like your, you I like your theory parts? Of the interconnected hive mind of the synthetics.
Are there two more parts? Right.
No, that was, I okay. was kind of running through nice. All three of them. One thing on a quick aside, I'd like to point out that, adding to my Kim Pine is, evil. Do you remember her sitting, eating lunch by herself, listening to opera music like a psycho? That's what psychos do.
Really?
They sit and eat their sandwich looking at a cliff. And listening to opera.
She's a cultured individual.
Yeah, that is.
It is very
lonely. Hannibal Lecter she's and just her lonely. Are the only two people that do true. That shit. True.
So the question is,
she's eating
was
a face
she,
sandwich.
Did she know, was it Commodore O mm-hmm. was coming? Was no. that like the meetup? Or?
I feel like, well, I think she knew because she has robot spies everywhere that are feeding her information constantly because she's a mastermind. But Commodore O didn't know. Like, it wasn't like a planned thing. She thought she was catching her by surprise with her sweet CSI glasses.
She is the leading expert on synthetics in the world. So,
can you say that yeah. three more times so we know exactly why she's around?
do you guys think that she totally has other little operatives too?
No,
I don't know.
These two are her only, but they're like her star students who are going to be Gozer the Destroyer or whatever.
Gozer the Destroyer.
I don't.
At this point, like, I could pull out any theory. Like, it's Godzilla, and it's a possibility.
Yeah, we've just hit the end of Act One. Like, yeah. we have so much more to go.
Right.
Carolyn3K says, what do you think about Soji being an anthropologist? As far as a synthetic being an anthropologist.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? Because they're really made to gather and collect information and to learn from it. So it would, like, as a cover for why she has so much knowledge, I think it's a pretty good cover.
Yeah, it works for me.
Yeah.
Karen points out that opera is a thing.
Opera is a thing.
Apparently.
It is a thing.
It is a thing.
I know it exists in the world.
No, it is a theme.
Picard listens to opera.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've seen it quite a bit.
Okay.
Kirk wasn't an opera guy, though.
No, he liked the Beastie Boys.
Was it that thing? It wasn't for him.
He likes Sabotage.
Carolyn says, I love that Soji was revealed to be an anthropologist. What a great tie-in to Data and his study of humans. Mm-hmm. That is why I think the Destroyer is a red herring.
Oh.
I agree with you there, Karen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's how it all is linked together. going back to what I was mentioning about the holograms, Karen says, Grant, these holograms use J-light, but also like mini force fields and other energies that make them solid, which I guess is what you guys were saying.
Have y'all watched this show, Another Life, on Netflix?
Yes. I don't like it.
I'm not a fan. Space, like, soap opera.
Yes. Yeah.
But anyway, they have a really interesting hologram on that show. So if anyone is real into holograms that break all theories of holograms, give it a look.
It's the captain, right?
No, it's like the ship's computer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then Chupi says, do you think Romulan Borgs do not handle being separated from the collective well? It's traumatic, as we know from Seven's experience, but this is exceptional. Like, yeah. I guess they're in the room.
Yeah.
It is strange.
I think that goes back to what I think it's linked to why that Borg cube was disconnected from the collective. I think it was a huge traumatic or explosive event. So I'm interested to see the history of that cube.
Another thing I wanted to bring up, in particular with you, Mariah, but with everyone, I guess.
No, you want Mariah.
You guys can comment as well. I'm not really interested.
I'm going to go get a drink.
Yeah, let's get a beer, Mike. Yeah. Come on.
Costumes.
What about them?
In particular, the Starfleet costumes that we see Picard and Raffi wearing in the beginning, mm-hmm. but...
They're called uniforms.
Uniforms?
Yeah, uniforms.
The uniforms they're wearing here, they're with their big old puffy shoulders and everything, but... Like, Yeah. What struck you in this episode with all of you?
Oh, like, production wise, I think the tarot triangles were my favorite. I think the costumes, the uniforms are good. I think we've seen some really sharp stuff. The ship looks good. I am interested in this new, like almost, that looks good. It's very like TIE fighter.
Yes.
It looks like a Star-Lord ship in Guardians.
Oh, yeah.
With wings.
A little better.
Or like an expanded Formula One
nice
car.
Cargo bay here. I'm excited about that.
But anyway, the like controls, you know, all the like holographic controls are really interesting. Yeah. You know, it's not all the buttons and the beep boops that we've had in many Star Trek's past.
It felt like there's a lot of space in there.
Yeah.
It felt like a big warehouse.
Very large bridge, yeah.
I love the fact that Picard wanted to kind of sit. He was trying to figure out.
The captain's chair?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about the controls because I tease my wife all the time when we watch like a CSI. And they're always like, I'm like, oh, look, fake technology.
Yeah.
But here in the future kind of works for me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I thought the way that they kind of interacted with the controls was it made sense for Star Trek to evolve that way. As we, you know, if you think about the way the control panels looked in the original series versus when we started to see a different type of panel in TNG and in Voyager and Deep Space Nine, I like where we are now.
And I still like that it's like a reference to the like when you're engaging the warp drive.
Yeah,
it's like you're like moving the one lever, but he's doing it with like the thing wrapped around his hand. Anyway,
it's kind of cool.
It was cool.
Yeah.
I think all the art direction really seems organic to where we were before. It seems like, oh, this is where we would be.
A logical progression.
Yeah, definitely.
There was a scene where after Picard's been a dick to Raffi, there's a scene change, something else happens, probably on the Borg cube or some shit. But it cuts back to Raffi and she gets a phone call from Picard and it pops up and he's like, so you checking out that information? And this was my favorite scene in this episode because it did what is good storytelling, where you have characters that know each other better than we know the characters, and he just immediately knows that he's got her on the hook. She's going to be interested.
Yep. Yeah.
She's going to research this.
Like, very good. Carry on.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, yeah, cool. Carry on. And, I just wanted to give props because I know that we were shitting a little bit on the writing here, but I really enjoyed that. And those kind of details and scenes are what is good character building.
Mm-hmm. I want to be clear. I'm not shitting on all the writing or all aspects of it. I do like the storytelling and where it's going and the progression.
There's some clunky dialogue.
There's a lot of clunky dialogue. That's what I'm...
Did you guys have particular favorite scenes then?
I really like that scene.
That one?
Yeah.
I also think the questioning besides the news thing with the tarot card reader was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the acting was just really good in that scene and it was really believable.
I want to say to Mike's point, I think that to be a writer, right, and to, especially a TV writer.
So hard.
It's so hard. Like, that's a challenging job. And I'll be honest, I probably could not do it as well as Shobon.
Shobon.
But
Shobon.
But yes, I struggled connecting to elements of it. And that doesn't mean that I think it's terrible. It just means that I as an individual struggle with connecting with some of this dialogue. But I did like the scene with Captain Rios.
Yeah.
And I thought the pacing was great. And I thought the dialogue was punchy and it worked and it was believable. And it took me back into the scene where I was just flowing and not thinking about it.
It fit, unlike the Raffi scenes, they were adding Quark to this new character, but it worked. It felt like, oh, here's somebody I want to get interested in. It feels real and human. Yeah.
He definitely is supposed to be the rogue unknown. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wish they, reveled in the bad boyness before showing he has that underlying heart of gold
right
away.
Yeah.
Like with he's had trauma in his past and that's why he's a little bit standoffish. And they could have basked in that a little bit more, but
we open on him with shrapnel in his shoulder. Like
he's wounded, Grant.
In a real nonchalant way. Like,
yeah.
I'm literally wounded.
Let's have a conversation while this piece of titanium sticking out of my shoulder.
All right, so I think it's time for us to beam the fuck on out of here. Thanks, everyone, for joining live. Thank you, audio listeners, for listening to the pod. Please visit StarTrekPod.co to subscribe to the pod. We have an extensive back catalog covering every episode of Star Trek Discovery. We'll be covering Discovery in Season 3, so you want to subscribe for the rest of the Picard stuff, the rest of the Discovery stuff, maybe some Lower Decks coverage, so check all that out. Also, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Star Trek Pod, where we post Star Trek memes, GIFs, news, pod updates, and such. If you follow us there, that helps us out a lot.
And Patreon.com. Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go there and give us $2. $2 an episode.
$2.
That is $8 a month. And I think you can survive off of that. Most people are fine with sacrificing $8 for sweet, sweet content.
Content. Clyde, where can we follow you and your work online?
I've got a couple other podcasts, which you can catch me at keyandclyde.com. That's K-E-I and Clyde.com. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at Clyde Haynes.
Mariah.
I'm at Mariah Gossett on all social media platforms.
Spell it.
M-Y-R-R-I-A-H, and then Gossett, two S's and two T's on that.
Grant Davis.
Don't follow me. It's none of your business where I am. Leave me alone.
At Baron Von Grant.
Grant, I was going to say it too.
And you can find me on Twitter at...
That's doxing. That is what I was talking about doxing.
You can It's not doxing. No. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Moody. Until next week, live long and prosper.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Sometimes you just have to bow to the absurd.